so much of the pursuit of Jesus is discipline. It's not giving in to your flesh. It's disciplining your flesh. And if that means waiting so we don't sin, like, it's a calling. It's a calling to a higher standard.
From Crossroads Media, this is See Hear Love with Melinda Esterbrooks, Season 10, Episode number 24.
Well, welcome back to a very special show, podcast show, here at See Hear Love. This is really good. This is going to be a great conversation because I have Rebecca St. James and Cubby Fink in the Crossroads podcast studio right here in Burlington, Ontario. They came up from Nashville, Tennessee to be with us. And it's really going to be a great conversation because they're talking a lot about their latest book, Lasting Ever, Faith, Music, Family, and Being Found by True Love. But of course, being me, I decided to take out kind of 3-4 things within their story, within this book, that really resonated with me and resonated with my husband, Chris, and some of my girlfriends on topics that really matter. So get ready for a conversation about the purity movement and true love waits. I'm going to not even say anything. That's just the teaser. Get ready to listen in about the impact of childhood trauma and when we don't deal with our past traumas, how that can impact our marriage and relationships. We also talk about how to deal with conflict and some of the challenges in marriage. And should you even get married? And if you do, what are the things that we need to look for and the intentionalities and the hard work of being married? And then finally, we talk about just our advice and wisdom for those that have a marriage that may be sexless and not passionate, and you're just living in the grind and just putting your head down and just doing it and not really actually experiencing the fullness of a loving, thriving, flourishing marriage. So grateful to have Rebecca St. James, a Grammy and Dove Award-winning Christian music legend, with us. She has sold more than 2 million albums. She is an accomplished actress and author. A cool little tidbit is that her brothers are the duo for King and Country. And I met Rebecca back when I was in my mid-20s at Toronto Mission Fest, introducing her at a concert and at another concert in downtown Toronto where she was one of the big highlights and singers. So, but I haven't seen Rebecca in over 25 years. And then her husband, Cubby Fink, is with us. And he is the founding member of the multi-platinum Grammy-nominated indie pop band Foster the People. He is also a successful executive producer. He is a film producer. And him and Rebecca live in Nashville, Tennessee with their 3 children. So get ready for this beautiful conversation. I wish I could have talked to them for hours, and hopefully I'll do that again. But just thought for our See Hear Love community, to our lovelies and to our listeners and viewers, this is a much needed conversation on love, marriage, decisions, trauma, and hope in our relationships and marriage. So here we go. Let's listen in. Well, welcome Rebecca St. James and Cubby Fink to the Crossroads Unity Commons in Burlington, Ontario, Canada. It's great to have you here in our studio.
Great to be here. Thank you for having us.
Well, before this interview, I was outside in our offices talking to a bunch of producers, and we're talking about how you're here, and all of them are married. And we kind of jokingly said, or they said to me, you got to ask them, like, should we really get married? How do you keep a marriage flourishing and thriving every day? Ha, 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 ha. Like, they're all standing around. I'm like, okay, you want me to ask them that, like, jokingly or, like, serious? They're like, half and half. I'm like, oh, no. But maybe let's just start off with that. It is a good question because, you know, I mean, I'm in my second marriage. I went through a really devastating divorce publicly in ministry a number of years ago. Yes. And in God's time and journey and community and redemption, here I am, married again in a blended family. But that is a question for us married people, because some of the marriages aren't great and they're not thriving and flourishing. And so for you, what have you found? I know it's right off the top, but to keep a marriage thriving, flourishing, and not humdrum and, you know,
status quo.
And status quo. What have you both found on how to keep that alive?
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the questions that the guys were asking in the hallway was, you know, is it worth getting married? And I would say a resounding yes. You know, I mean, for me, my dream of my life was to get married and have a family. So I feel like I'm living my dreams right now. And it's not a bed of roses for anyone.
No.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I think Instagram can make it look like, oh, people are just, they're so in love and it's so perfect and their families are so perfect. And that's not true for anyone, you know, Christian or not. So I think everybody goes through challenges and, you know, we talk about it quite a lot, but we are promised in the Bible, like you in this life, you will have trouble.
Yeah.
So we've got to know that that's a given. It's not like we're being picked on,
right?
You know, if you're going through trouble. And so I just want to say a resounding yes, it is so worth it. And I think when you are both committed to sewing into the marriage, it just gets richer. And we're nearly 14 years in. And I'm just so thankful for the marriage equity that we have now, having gone through some hard times in our journey, because it's almost like you weather those hard times, you get to the other side of it, and you're like, wow, we've been through some stuff and we've come through closer and stronger. And in my family, we have family of origin, we've talked about resolved conflict leads to intimacy. And so I feel like even in the conflict that we've had to resolve or the challenging circumstances that have come from the outside, when we work on it, we really do have that opportunity to be closer on the other side of it. And so I think that's what we're both committed to.
Some are easier to talk because to live
it. I could tell you, it's very vulnerable. It's hard. I think if I'm looking back at my first marriage, even though he left and said, I don't want to be married to you anymore, if I was really honest, I would say that we didn't do the hard work and intentional work of working through the conflict. Like the things that weren't working, we kind of like just pushed aside and just kind of kept going or didn't think it was a big deal. I didn't want to deal with it because we're so conflict adverse that we were like, we don't.
And I think a lot of people relate to that.
Right.
Glad you said that, because I think a lot of people are listening going, and I mean, and we're listening going, yeah, you know, it's hard to do that. You feel vulnerable. And I think there's a lot of fear too of like, okay, if I'm going to put myself out there like this and go, this is how I'm feeling, or I'm feeling hurt, or, you know, this was wounding, or I don't like this pattern, how is my spouse going to receive that? Are they going to be gentle with my heart? Are they going to be coming back at me and going, well, you're not perfect either, and you've got this and that, and I'm hurt about this, and how's it going to be? But I think when we're both seeking to humbly, and this is what I think, you know, we're wanting to live out, especially in this season of marriage, is humbly come to each other. And even if we're mad, just kind of reach out, you know, and put an arm on the other person or a hand and just go, hey, I'm sorry, I may not have handled that super well, but can we talk about it? And can we, you know, get through this?
Cubby, is that easy for you to do? And I don't want to generalize as men, because I have actually an exceptional man who's very much more that. But my friends' husbands, and I'm not talking about anybody specifically, it's hard for them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a learned thing. It's not something that came to me naturally. And
or maybe many men at all, naturally.
Right.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of guys would identify with the fact that it's not natural to necessarily reach out. And even in communication, not even necessarily reaching out physically, even reaching out in communication, I think a lot of guys might identify with that as well. It's like I had a very, you know, I'm more of an introvert than an extrovert. She's the extrovert. I would have a tendency to just assume things, especially the deeper you get into a marriage.
Yeah.
You can read your spouse very well, and it's a lot that you can assume just by kind of a countenance and what she's carrying and all the things. And it's easy to kind of just retreat into your corner and assume that she's dealing with whatever she's dealing with. But to kind of break that wall of assumption and push through that, and Beck talks about this in our book. She calls it the sixth love language, which he identifies as curiosity.
Good. I love that word. It's one of my favorite words. Yeah.
And the mighty curiosity is really, you know, going past the assumption and saying, okay, what is actually going on? And even if the answer she gives me is what I'm already assuming, the act of crossing that line and pursuing her and drawing her out, I mean, she feels so loved by that, for one. Then just the amount of connection that builds, that the bridge that builds between the two of us, I think is really beautiful.
It's good. Here's the thing. It takes a lot of work. And I think with some of the issues that we find in marriage is that we're not working at it. I think there's the assumption of things are, they're just going to happen. It will be easy. Yeah. And I think listening to, and even for my own, you know, the two marriages, it was a lot of work. And, you know, now even with my second one with blended family, that's a whole other experience of work and component. So how do you really work on it? Like, there are times where I don't want to work on it. Mm-hmm. I really am like, I'm exhausted from, you know, the kids. I'm exhausted with my job. I just want to binge, you know, some really good six-part series on Netflix. I want to go shopping with my girlfriends. I want to go get a spa, you know, go to the spa.
Yeah.
Don't want to work on it. But you have to or else it isn't going to sustain.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So the work, I mean, like you said, but it's how do you choose to say this is actually a priority? And it sounds so simple, but it isn't in a lot of ways where sometimes I don't make it the priority it needs.
I think it's sometimes just pulling back and going, okay, what is actually really important to me in life? Like, you know.
Yes.
Do I want a healthy marriage? You know, do I want a home life that feels peaceful and joyous? You know, like what are my values? Like what are the big buckets that I want to be filled in my life? And I think when I pull back from my emotion and just go, oh, these are things that I really value, that I want. I want unity with my spouse. I want peace. I want joy there. Mm-hmm. I want our kids to see us unified. That's another big motivating factor for me.
Yeah.
Is like, I want them to see us connected and not feel this tension in the room of a lingering squabble, you know? So I think that's part of it, just kind of pulling back. And it, honestly, sometimes too, because I feel the same to you as what you're saying. Sometimes it's just like, oh, I don't have the energy to talk that through right now or to be the one to kind of bring up the conflict. But I think sometimes what we've done, you know, sometimes we've waited till the next day to talk about it, honestly, till there's less emotion or tiredness. We've done that before because I think initially in marriage, I was like, let's not let the sun go down on our anger. And even if it's 3 a.m. and we've been talking for 2 hours about it, we just got to just press through till the peace comes. So now I'm a little bit more on the grace end of like, let's probably talk about it tomorrow. But another thing I think we've done a little bit more recently is just actually just pray in the middle of it and just go, hey, can we just pray about this? And just go, Lord, we need your help, you know. And sometimes it's an outside thing that's adding stress to us. So, but help us here and just help us be in unity, help us get back on the page. And that kind of diffuses things too.
It's good. Doesn't feel awkward, Cubby?
I mean, it can at times.
Yeah, no, I get it. Because I'm thinking about all my guy friends who are like, oh, that sounds so awkward in the middle of a conversation. But
yeah, and I think we've learned, I mean, we've learned what works best for us. I think every relationship having there is going to be a little bit different. And we've had to learn even over the course of the last 14 years what works best for us.
Yeah.
Because there was things that we both, I mean, everybody goes into any relationship, especially marriage, with having their separate families shoot things a certain way, seeing their parents operate in a certain way. You come in with your own assumptions and the way things are going to operate.
Expectations.
And there's always going to be a bit of a rub because people don't operate the same. So it's taken us time even to figure out, okay, let's, I'm much more of a internal processor. She's a verbal processor. So in her, and you know, in her heart and intention of like sorting the things out as quickly as possible, it always put me on my heels because it's like, I can't sort this. I literally cannot sort this out right now because I need time to process it internally and then come to the table and process it with you verbally. So she's, you know, learned that and given me the space to, you know, take the time that I need. And then I come to her and I'm able to allow her to be verbal in the process.
And that's really important because for, again, experiences and friends, you know, sometimes even myself, I'm demanding a response now,
right?
You know, like, tell me how you're feeling. What, blah, 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 blah. And my husband, just like you, Cubby, is like, whoa, oh, I'm a processor. I need to process and feel the feelings. And then I want to come back to you, Melinda, with a thoughtful response versus I want reaction. Give me the reaction and whatever. Now that can be so harmful too, because then sometimes in our immediate reaction, we say things that should never be said out loud.
Right.
So I respect Chris in a big way because that I've had to learn that because I'm like, tell me now, let's go. So I think that's really, really helpful. But also, Rebecca, for you to say, okay, I understand that. I will respect that. Give him the space and time
And not take it kind of personally.
Yeah.
I think that what I used to do early in marriage was like, this is kind of a rejection of me right now.
Right.
He can't just give something to me. He can't just share some kind of thought. And he literally would be like, I literally have no thoughts in my head right now because it's, I just need some time.
Well,
like
a lot of thoughts.
Just make, not anything that he could, right, he could actually put together and share with me. And so, you know.
That's good.
I have learned to take, I think, some of the personalness out of it. Like, this is not really about me. This is about his process and giving him some time.
Yeah.
And some grace in that, too.
That's good.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Addison Espilla, one of the content producers here at See Hear Love. I just wanted to take a moment to invite you to join our community called the See Hear Lovelies. Here's how. Number one, sign up to our weekly newsletter. Every week, you'll get a personal note from Melinda with links to our shows, blogs, and resources, as well as inspirational content and a short devotional. You'll also be the first to know about upcoming events and giveaways. QR code is in the show description or sign up through our website at seehearlove.com and look for the newsletter icon. Number two, join us in studio and be part of our studio audience. Take a behind-the-scenes tour in our master control room, editing suites, and studio. You'll meet Melinda and the See Hear Love co-hosts and guests. Email us at seehearlove@crossroads.ca for more info. And finally, number three, become a monthly partner. $25 or $50 a month will help us share our brave themes and conversations on television, here on podcast, YouTube, video streaming, and on our social media platforms. We can't do See Hear Love without donations and sponsorships, so please go to www.seehearlove.com/donate and give your one-time or monthly donation today. Become a See Hear Lovely and join our See Hear Love community of belonging, vulnerable and brave conversations. We are here for you.
All right, I want to get to three moments and things in your story that have really interested me and some of my friends on this. And then I want to come at the end of the conversation, just some encouragement to our viewers and listeners. But the first one, and this is an interesting one, because a number of people asked me to do a story on this or a show on this, and I haven't, which was on the purity movement. And I'm grateful that you're willing to talk about it in the True Love Waits and, on the other side, talk about those who found the purity movement to be harmful. I'll be straight up. Both sides. I have people who True Love Waits. We are yes, and we did. And then I have on the other side, people said, so harmful to us. We are actually,
still
our divorce is what actually happened through that.
No.
There are things that weren't healthy in my church and family that did not set us up for success with that. So I'd love your thoughts on the True Love Waits, but I also would love, honestly, your thoughts and us to dialogue about this, because this is something, especially as a Gen Xer, and we know about Josh Harris and all that's come about in that, of where we are today. So let's just throw it out there and chat, because that's one of the conversations that my people have said, oh, this would be great to bring to Cubby and Rebecca to have a conversation.
Thank you for bringing it.
Okay,
I love that.
Good.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can only ever, right, speak from our own experience. We can't summarize other people's experiences.
Right.
But for me, and I'll let Cubby speak for himself too, but for me, the True Love Waits movement was a good movement.
Okay.
It was encouraging. It was life-giving. It was supportive of a commitment that I'd already made.
Right.
I wanted to honor God in my relationships with the opposite sex. And I wanted to wait for the one that I hoped that he had for me. And I was very public about that, you know, and part of that happened real naturally because my ministry launched around the same time that the True Love Waits movement in the U.S. was just so flourishing. and so I would just get asked to speak or sing at these, you know, True Love Waits rallies. And they would say, hey, can you say a couple words about the importance of this teenager talking to teenager? So it happened really organically. And honestly, I've had such huge response to that. From other young people saying, thank you for talking about it. And parents saying, thank you with tears in their eyes for talking about it. That I just kept talking about it in every show all around the world. And then I had a song about it for my future husband, you know, called Wait For Me. You know, saying I'm waiting for you, praying for you, wait for me too. You know, about Cubby, but I didn't know him at that point. So it became this big ministry focus. I think the part that was hard for me was it was so public that, you know, I found myself in my early 30s still waiting for this person and my very lonely heart really struggled to even sing that song. Like, what if this is not going to happen? So I'm just so thankful that it did. And we got married at 33. And we, you know, we didn't do everything perfectly. Like, no one does.
Right.
We all need the grace of God.
Yeah.
You know, we all sin. We all fall short. And that has to be said, because it's so true. Like, we all make mistakes. But I think purity was such an important value for us. And we're speaking to it, to our kids,
right,
about it now.
Right.
And just going, God calls us to holiness in every area of our life, not just this one.
Mm-hmm.
This is not just some kind of isolated part of life, sexuality. It's he calls us to honoring him in every area, mm-hmm, including our sexuality. So that being said, I have heard these stories of and read some of these testimonies of people that have been wounded through that movement. And I think this is how I filed it away, Melinda, is that I think their experience, and again, I don't want to project, but what I hear as a through line is that their experience was one of legalism, not of love.
Mm.
That they were taking this in and going, this is just a bunch of rules to follow that are kind of restricting, you know, this part of my life, and I'm feeling fear instead of the freedom,
mm,
that God calls us to within his boundaries. And I wish it had been different for those people. I wish they had have heard this message of, because of the love of God, he gives us these instruction books and this boundaries in the Bible that are for our good. They're for our flourishing. It's not about obeying the rules and getting it perfect and earning this thing from God. It's actually for our flourishing and our good. And so I think we want to express this in the book too, we feel compassion for those that have been hurt through that.
That's good. No, I appreciate you saying
and
that.
And sorrow for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the compassion, tenderness, and kindness is key.
Yes.
I think the stories I hear from girlfriends and guy friends who were harmed is that, first of all, families were too afraid to talk about healthy sexuality relationship.
100%.
Churches, and I sat through horrific teachings on masturbation, sex, and everything that were so awful as a 16-year-old going, really? And then the teaching that, you know, if you're horny and you want to have sex and you better get married so that you don't sin. And so I have a number of friends who got married very young, came into it and said, our sex is horrible. This is not what we thought. And divorced within either years or years later.
So they rushed it. They rushed it
because the messaging was, you don't want to sin by having sex before marriage, so you better get married so that you can have like safe sex within the confines of marriage.
I see.
Again, that taught in the church, taught by family, so people rushed into it. And this is like Gen X. This is like that time.
Right.
And now I find people are being a lot more open about talking in healthy ways of our own sexuality, love.
Yes.
Consent and relationship and just, you know, honoring and holiness to that. But that's where I think
I see
the harmfulness of the purity movement went. And so people now are like, this is what I was taught. We were told this and that. And yet it wasn't based out of love.
Right.
It was fear and legalism.
Yeah.
And I think you just said that. It was really beautifully said because that's the harm that's been done.
Right.
And so I have a number of girlfriends who are like, oh. And so that's where the feeling of harm and sort of this anti-purity movement has come from.
Right.
But I think you're right in saying it wasn't love. It was legalism, which
for
then
comes here. And
for them, for some
people, based on how it was handled, I think, in their particular church or with their particular leaders. But I think the intent of that movement was love.
Yeah.
And the intent of that was to point people towards seeking to honor God in every area.
Yeah. Cubby, did you feel that way? I mean, as a man, again, I don't want to generalize because, I mean, but, you know, I saw 16-year-old boys in these youth groups being taught this and they were like, what? We've got all this emotion and hormones and energy. And so was it easy? How do you feel about the true love waits and also the thought of what happened in the way of that teaching I've told you? Like, people are like, if you're going to have sex, you better then get married. And you could be 19 or 20 and just go. Because we'd rather that than actually a healthy, loving relationship.
Totally. I, like Rebecca, had a relatively good experience in the way that that movement intersected with my life at kind of those pivotal hormonal seasons. I mean, adolescence and all of it was kind of right at the heart. I mean, I was right at the heart of, you know, when all of that stuff was not with the True Love Waits movement. So I was lucky enough to be in a church that handled those topics really well.
My so good.
Lead pastor presented those things beautifully and did it with a lot of love and grace. And honestly, I do believe that, I mean, the heart of the gospel is love. The heart of the scriptures is love. The application of those things can get a little altered based on just a desire. And I've seen it in parenting. Like our desire, I mean, our number one motivation for our kids is love. But in a desire to kind of protect those kids, we can force things on them out of protection and it can end up harming them. And I think even though our motivation is love and protection, the way we apply the things we want them to do can ultimately end up potentially causing more harm than good. And I think both Rebecca and I were lucky in the fact that we had parents that modeled the gospel very well and they didn't force the gospel upon us. And I think it's similar with this. I think the heart behind the movement was good. The heart was upholding a virtue, upholding a standard that God has called us to, not to withhold something from us, but to protect us and to protect our marriage and to protect who we are.
We talk about that in the books.
And I think the hard part is because the church is a beautiful place, but it's run by imperfect people. And the application of God's word will oftentimes be applied imperfectly because of our imperfect nature. And unfortunately, the follow-up of that is real and people do get hurt. And I think my encouragement in all of it has always been, try not to blame God for man's shortcomings.
Yeah.
Man will get things wrong over and over and over. God does not get things wrong. So God's way is perfect. What he calls us to is perfect. What he calls us to is for our benefit. What he calls us to is not keeping something from us, but actually offering something that's far better than what our flesh must desire.
That's good.
And I think in the midst of that message, I mean, it seemed to resonate. And I think it really comes down to so much of the pursuit of Jesus is discipline. It's not giving in to your flesh. It's disciplining your flesh. And if that means waiting so we don't sin, like, it's a calling. It's a calling to a higher standard. And I think the culture would say, well, if you're feeling these things, you should just act on them. And it's natural. And it's the way we're wired. And I think if the holiness movement had been a movement around murder, I don't think anybody would say, they told me not to be angry about it. It's not apples to apples, but it's a virtue that the movement was trying to uphold and encourage. Sad thing is we've swung so far to the other end of the pendulum is that people are scared to talk about it because they don't want to cause harm. But I think it is a standard that I think is worth continuing to call people to. And it's laid out in the scriptures, like I said, for our benefit.
Yeah, good.
And I also think it's important for us, those of us that are parents, to wrestle through this and layer out what we believe. Because if we are, man, that was just a terrible movement, nothing good in it, and we throw the baby out with the bathwater, then we're literally throwing out this call to holiness that is very scriptural, you know? And so we have to go, okay, well, there was some parts of that that weren't handled super well by humans. I love that, that Cubby's saying that humans are going to fail us. God will not fail us. But what does he actually call us to in the Bible? He does call us to honor him in purity and honor him with our sexuality. And so what are we going to teach our kids? Yeah. That's the really important
question. That is so good, because a lot of people be like, you know, our kids are making decisions and the school didn't teach them well and the church. And I go, whoa.
Yep. No, that's
as a parent right here.
Yeah. You know, having those conversations first.
And it's uncomfortable. We've had talks with our kids and we're like, really? And we're like, yep, let's sit down over dinner and talk. Really, Mel? Dad? We're like, yeah, because we want to share about our values and our love. And we do this because we love you.
Yes.
I'm not doing this to condemn you or shame you or embarrass you. The heart of our conversation, this hard conversation that Dad and I are even having to prep for.
Yes.
Because we love you.
Yep.
We want to talk about this.
And there's a lot of good resources, too. Like, I have a podcast with Focus on the Family that I just love. It's a parenting podcast, and I'm learning so much from all these experts. I get to help interview them. But Focus on the Family has launched into the teen years that I'm doing with our nearly 11-year-old right now. And it's fabulous. And
good.
Setting up in a gracious, loving, wise way, and a relational way, because her and I do it together and go on dates and, like, talk about all these things. You know, truth, then the foundation for identity and the foundation for her value and the foundation of her friendships and the foundation of her sexuality. It's so great. So there's a ton of resources.
Good. Yeah. I love that, which is what parents need and to hear. And I appreciate that because I think what I'm hearing is, you know, it's not just in sexuality, but in our whole life.
Whole life.
Of the call for holiness and discipline and honoring God. And yet, you know, if there were decisions made that were, you know, you had sex before marriage, then there's grace and forgiveness and redemption
100%.
In all of that. And so I think just to say that is really important because I'm speaking to people who have, you know, been on a different journey and other journeys. And so thank you for saying that. I think it's just really important that we speak it.
Yes.
And we say that to those who are listening.
And if there's wounding too or abuse, like, reach out for help with that. You know, reach out to a trusted Christian counselor. Go to someone in your church family that can mentor you through that. Because a lot of people do have that too. You know, and we talk about that in the book too, because Cub had some trauma in his early life. So reach out for the help that you need so that you can be the healthiest version of yourself to show up in your marriage and with your kids in the healthiest way.
Good. Yeah, thank you. That's my next point is... childhood trauma. Why I say that is that a lot of my girlfriends dealing with that, even myself. And I think to be courageous, vulnerable, open to be able to talk about that, Cubby, is great, especially as a man who a lot of men I know and in the speaking I do, it's so full of shame to talk about childhood trauma being done to me. Just like push through, head down, let's just go.
Right.
So to take a moment now to talk about that and how that, you know, again, whether you feel safe enough to talk about the trauma, but also how that impacted your life. But then how are you two managing that within marriage? Because we know family of origin and the stuff that happened before we bring into our marriage. And then we're like, wow, we're holding it going, oh,
yeah.
Now we're working through this in our marriages. We're trying to work out the two of us, but now you're bringing all of this in.
Totally.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd love to hear the journey and your experience through this.
Yeah, I mean, it was a unique journey in the sense that it was something that I had, it's just a strange curiosity about most of my life, but didn't have necessarily clear memories about. And I talk about it in the book, but I basically have too good of a memory. I remember everything, every little detail. I mean, my earliest memories of me are of me laying in the crib and watching the mobile spin over my head.
Wow.
Just every detail of my life is cataloged and in vivid detail, except for one season of my life when we had moved from Colorado to California. We lived in this neighborhood, and I remember everything about the neighborhood. I remember the sidewalk, the fences, the smells of the trees and all of these things. But there was one house that I know I went in several times that I have zero memories of, the inside of that house. And that was always just sort of a weird thing. It's like, why don't I have memories from inside of that house? But I do have a memory of the father of that house being arrested and watching him being taken away in a police car. And so that always kind of stuck with me, but again, I never really pushed into it. It's like, well, I don't have memories. There's probably nothing there. But even in the process of this book, looking at the different seasons of my life and seeing how those suppressed memories were causing different pain and things to kind of manifest in certain ways has been very interesting, but it really all kind of came to a head and what we've referred to in the book as our winter season. Our first couple of years of marriage were beautiful. We refer to them as the blissful years. And a lot of people told us that, oh, just get ready. Marriage is hard. And I mean, for us, the first couple of years were amazing. We were traveling with the band and just doing a lot of incredible things. And life was breezy and easy and marriage was fun. And we suddenly found ourselves thrust into what we refer to as the winter season. And that was brought on by several things, one of which kind of a separation with my band in a kind of an unforeseen way that threw me completely sideways. And Rebecca was struggling with miscarriage and my mom was dying of a disease. And it was just kind of blow after blow after blow. And on top of that, I was kind of at this the biggest crossroads of my life and desperately calling out to the Lord for direction on what to do next and just being met with silence, which was unique because at every crossroads prior to that, God was exponentially clear on what to do and how to do it. And so just in this season of a lot of questioning and a lot of hurt and pain, and even in the midst of what was, you know, on paper, just in the immediate vicinity, all the pain that was there, I was noticing that my reactions to things were still not congruent with the reality of what I was dealing with. There was far more of a visceral reaction to somewhat benign things, and not necessarily physical, or I wouldn't yell or scream or anything like that, but internally it would just throw me into, I mean, the simplest things would just throw me into a complete tailspin, and ended up just kind of ending up in a kind of a low, kind of depressed state in that season, and realized that there was something going on internally that needed to be dealt with. And my mind kind of went back to those memories that I didn't have. And I said, okay, well, maybe this is the time to try and figure out what's going on there, because there's obviously a lot that needs to be dealt with. And so kind of admitted that I needed help. And Rebecca helped me find a counselor that I kind of started the journey with, and then ended up moving to Nashville and finding a guy there in Nashville that really kind of walked that journey with me. And it was something that was not easy. It was not something that I was excited to do. It was something that I honestly kind of dreaded, especially with kind of the first session being one of the more emotional experiences I've ever had. I mean, just absolutely broke down in tears and hadn't cried in years, and suddenly found myself uncontrollably sobbing. And so that was kind of the beginning of this journey where, step by step, we were getting closer to kind of unlocking those memories. And it was something that took so much emotional energy. I would usually need a few weeks to a couple of months between sessions just to recuperate and regain the strength to continue the journey. But ultimately, the component that kind of gave me that the strength to push over the finish line was finding out that we were having a son. And obviously my motivation in all of this was to be the healthiest version of myself for my wife, for my two daughters. And then hearing that I was having a son, just wanting to make sure that I was modeling for him what true courage is. Because I think, like you said, I think the courageous thing in the culture's eye is just to flex your muscles and push through it and ignore the pain. But I think to dive into the pain is true courage. Yeah.
100%.
So having that final motivation to kind of be that model for my son was a thing that provided me the strength to get over the finish line, and ended up kind of having these concluding sessions where I was able to literally step back into that house, and the Lord opened my eyes to memories that I had not had in 30, 40 plus years, and ultimately experienced Jesus in that moment, experienced his warmth, experienced his compassion, and him saying that he did not want that for me. His heart was broken for me in that situation. But seeing it for what it was, just seeing it for just spiritual warfare and just experiencing the love of Christ on the other side of it, and the healing that existed, getting beyond the hurt and receiving it in a way that I had never received it, was life-changing. I mean,
I'm tearing, and the reason why is there's a couple of things, and then Rick, I'd love you to respond. It's hard work, and a lot of people don't want to do that. They don't want to go through that. They don't want to uncover painful things that you just want to like suppress and keep down, because then you have to deal with it. And what are the repercussions, and what will that look like? I think that courage is, it's huge. And to share this is really, you know, I think because one of my girlfriends went through something where she had to unlock some very painful things. And for you, what you just said, knowing that Jesus, even though it was awful, Jesus was in the midst of it, and Jesus can redeem it, and Jesus loves you. And that's really important. And I think it's important for not just even doing it fit for Rebecca and for your son, but for you and the relationship with God and you.
100%.
Right?
100%.
It is. And how we're motivated, but to do it for you and to do that hard work is huge, because a lot of people don't. And I think the impact of that in a marriage, and like you can talk about that, is huge. Because a lot of, I think that's the key. A lot of times marriages are like, why are we imploding? Why are these things not working? And why are we heading to divorce? I think has a lot to do that we have not chosen to do the hard work of dealing with trauma, shame, and all the things from family of origin or childhood trauma that we just want to lock away and not deal with.
And the freedom I've seen on him.
Yes.
And the greater connection and closeness that we've experienced on the other side of that is just amazing. So I think what I would encourage listeners that are kind of absorbing it and going, well, yeah, you know, kind of feeling like what you were saying, I'm not sure I want to deal with that ever. I would say, but do you want to deal with, for the rest of your life, a stifled sense of freedom? Like, which is the harder thing? Is it harder to go through kind of short-term pain for long-term gain? Or is it harder to go through your whole life feeling the shadow over you? And so I believe that the path that Cub chose and the path that we all, you know, have access to is this freedom that Jesus offers, and this safety in his love, and this kind of new sense of joy and peace that can be accessed when we do face those hard things.
Yeah. So good. Thank you for your courage.
Absolutely.
It's tough. I probably, Cubby, when you were going through it, you're like, I don't know. You know, after those sessions with your counselor, it's like, and, you know, I've been through counseling, and, you know, when I went through my divorce, I went in because I'm like, we need to talk about my divorce. And my counselor's like, oh no, we're going to go way back.
Yeah.
So all these things, I'm like, no, I want this situation resolved. And she's like, no, there's history and things that we need to deal from the past to bring you here to deal with. That's what you're right.
Yeah.
Freedom, because now I can go into my second marriage and a lot of the issues that I was dealing with and not dealing with my first are now open to Chris. And we have, you know, this really beautiful marriage because we did the hard work of working through the things.
Good job.
So thank you. And that's a testimony to the, you know, your marriage too. Thank you. There's so much more I want to talk about, but my producer, Addison, just gave me the 5-minute hand mark. And I'm like, I need 2 more hours. So I was going to talk about ministry burnout, Rebecca, because I went through that, but we'll have to figure out another time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's finish with this then, because this Lasting Ever book, but your advice to a couple who are really struggling. Sexless marriage, I've heard these stories where, you know, the passion's gone. We are just trying to survive with kids, finances, the stress of the world and the climate of our political situation, all the things that are happening. It is so much.
It's so much.
It is so much. And we're barely hanging on. What would you say?
I think there's a lot of people out there that would relate to some version of that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know we have, like, we've felt that, you know, just under it, in it, surviving, you know, like kind of creeping through. And so we relate to that too. I think, you know, And we probably would refer back to especially our winter season that we do talk about in a lot in the book, because we want to talk about the highs and the lows. We want to talk about the real stuff, the authentic stuff.
Yeah.
But I think what we sought to do imperfectly, you know, it's true. But what we sought to do in that time was go, you know, God, you have been good in our past. We see it. We remember. And we know that you're going to be good in this too. And that you're going to somehow bring beauty from ashes, and you're somehow going to restore, and you're somehow going to redeem. And we, our part is just to show up and to patiently endure and try to step towards each other instead of away. I think the easiest thing to do in the hard times is just to muscle it out on our own and just kind of either dig our head in the sand and run away, but especially in marriage, to run away from each other. And I would just encourage each person is feeling that to move towards God and your spouse and reaffirm that commitment to them. Like, I want to try for this. I want to go for this. I'm going to do the work. I invite you to do the work with me. We'll be in it together because it's worth it. It's just worth it. It's worth it with God. It's worth it in marriage and family. It's worth it to fight through and to endure. And we really pray that a lasting legacy of this book, Lasting Ever, will be that people choose to stick it out with God and in family life.
Beautiful. Thank you.
I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned in recent years is that the pain and the hard of our immediate circumstances is compounded exponentially by unresolved hurt in our past. And just kind of based on the story I just told you, the way that I'm able to cope with, I mean, life is still not easy. Life will never be easy. Like, there's highs and lows, and there's summers and springs and winters and all the things, but there's always going to be hard stuff in our life. But all of those things, like I said, are compounded when you have stuff that's unresolved. And I think one of the things that keeps us from wanting to dive into that hard stuff is that the pain doesn't make sense. But when you push into it, at least what I've found, and I've heard many testimonies, is that you find purpose in the pain.
I mean, you reflect on it.
When you reflect on it, you're able to find healing in Jesus in that pain. And I think one of the biggest ploys of the enemy is to keep our shame and our pain and our hurt hidden away. And it kind of keeps it in the shadows. And that's really the enemy's territory.
Yeah.
He has control over those things when they're left in the shadows, but you bring them into the light and you take them out of the victory circle of the enemy and you put them into the victory circle of Jesus, and he's able to redeem them and he's able to give you insight and teach you just about his grace and his love and his compassion for you. And it just makes the hardness of the immediate so much easier. I mean, life will never be easy. But being able to deal with all of the things that you listed off, it radically changes your perspective on everything. That's worth doing the work for the here and now.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, just a takeaway, and then we need to close up. But thank you for the hope that you bring.
Good.
You know, really, good. With courage and hope, I think just with this perseverance of, you know, for, you know, Rebecca, just in all of, you know, the music and all of this, and it can look like we've got it all together and we're there and we're close to Jesus and we're making all the right decisions. And yet I think the lesson in, and thank you. So for writing the book, Lasting Ever, Faith, Music, Family, and Being Found by True Love. Thank you for that. Because sometimes speaking is one thing and then writing it down forever on, it's a lot. Here we are, world, right? Here we are. But even the two of you being together and sharing, not just individually, but together, sharing the story is powerful. There is power in that.
Thank you for that.
And your openness, vulnerability, and authenticity. We need this in the world today. So thank you, Rebecca St. James, Cubby Fink. Great name still. We need to figure that out too. Thank you for coming to Canada, sharing the story. And what an honor and privilege to be here as sisters, brothers, and new friends. Love, I'll share our story.
Thank you for your great work on this podcast and your encouragement.
Thank you so much.
That was a conversation. If you were just listening and you weren't watching, I was getting teary when Cubby was sharing about his childhood trauma. I think many of us have had trauma in our lives, and to hear the journey, the hard work of what he had to do, but also when we choose to do the hard work, what that can do in our relationships and marriage. And again, I shared a lot of things, you know, that I'm learning, especially being in my second marriage where, you know, friends that are married, you got to do the hard work. You can't push things aside. You can't be conflict adverse. You've got to deal with childhood traumas and things that have happened to you. And men especially, I don't want to be generalizing, but men, you've got to talk about your emotions and feelings and work with your partner through this marriage. And women, and I'm talking to myself, we need to slow down and listen and not always point the finger at blame and that you're not enough and you do it wrong. You don't make good decisions. So for both of us in our partnerships and marriage, we need to have grace and love and patience to do the work, but also we need to choose to do the hard work. So thank you so much, Rebecca St. James and Cubby Fink, for coming up to Canada to be with us. Thank you for sharing courageously your truths and your experiences. And for all of us, let's pick up this book, Lasting Ever, Faith, Music, Family, and Being Found by True Love, by Rebecca and Cubby. I think it will encourage you in your marriage and relationship. So all that to say, thank you for listening. I always love bringing these conversations to you so that we can learn together on this crazy, beautiful, full life and journey that God has for us as we are becoming more and more like him. So thanks for joining us. And always remember that you are seen, heard, and deeply loved by God.
Thank you for joining See, Hear, Love with Melinda Esterbrooks. This podcast is a Crossroads Media production. We're grateful for our sponsors, Tyndale University and the Canadian Bible Society. Until next time, always remember, you are seen, you are heard, and you are loved by God.